podcast is part of the Podcast You're Seeing Network. Visit us at www.podcastyourseeing.com.
Media has an agenda that they're gonna serve. I don't know who's in charge of it or what it is, if it's like a headless monster.
Why? This is a question.
Walking backwards. Yeah. Something sacred.
I don't know the names of the creep songs. Those
running
are
in circles.
Just pop in and let play.
Sea of Glass.
It's the Flight and the Fall.
I love Ozzy. I think he's the true definition of a rock star.
Anybody else have any interesting stories they don't want to come to?
This is Doug from After the Fall. Hey, this is John Lane from the thriving metropolis of Leechburg, Pennsylvania.
The Pennsylvania Rock Show, featuring the best unsigned rock that Pennsylvania has to offer.
Shipping your God machine, eyes on the street light. Hey, it's Bill, and you're tuned in to the Pennsylvania Rock Show, episode number 584, right here on PARockShow.com, MegaRockRadio.net, 107.1 FM, St. Louis, Missouri, AltRockRadio.ca in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, RootRootRadio.com on the beaches of San Diego, XRPRadio.co.uk in Birmingham, United Kingdom, and right here in the thriving metropolis of Leechburg, Pennsylvania, buildthescene.com. My name is Bill. With me tonight are Mikey P and Cam from Skell. What's up, gentlemen?
How you doing? Good to hear from you.
What's happening?
I just got done recording an episode of Three Questions and a Song like 30 minutes ago with Gallo Lochnez, and I told him this will be the longest conversation I've ever had with Cameron.
That's how I was going to break the ice. I was about to say, I think this is the first conversation we've had, actually.
I've nodded at you in passing a few times.
Yeah, I feel like I know you already very well. So,
well, that's with Gallo. I stood beside him during I was at Royal Honey's CD release, and he was literally standing right beside me within 2 feet. I never said a word to him.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I knew who he was. He didn't know who I was, and I was like, nah, I'm not going to bother him.
Yeah.
Are you guys familiar with Gallo?
No.
I don't know.
Right,
so Gallo is a hip-hop artist from Pittsburgh.
Okay.
If you have heard the new one, the Walking Away track by the Borstal Boys that Matt Franny plays on, there's... Okay. There's hip hop in that track. That's him.
Okay. Now I have a reference.
Is that the new CD you just got, Mikey, that he gave you?
Yes.
Probably yes. Crumbs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So he also, I was looking through his list of accomplishments and credits, and he has produced a lot of stuff for a lot of big name places like the NBA and Netflix. And so.
Oh, that's kinda awesome.
Yeah, he's originally
What part of town is he from?
I don't know.
Okay.
His bio says Pittsburgh, which could be anywhere from Erie to right. Where I am.
Yeah.
But he is originally from the Bronx, which makes me wonder why he came here.
Yeah, especially New York, hip-hop central over there, you know? It's weird to come here, but
I didn't get to ask him that. Instead, we talked about food trucks and pizza and hot dogs and
everything that matters.
That's right.
You probably didn't hear me. It was probably the Steelers.
It might have been.
Right.
So for people that are tuning in for the first time, usually I have some cool pictures behind me and a green screen. None of that this week or the coming future. Those of you that are familiar with the local scene, Bill Volgris is a name you probably know from Amber Alexis.
Yes.
Bill is currently working in my living room fixing my ceiling. Yeah, so those of you that have been here for the rock show, actually in my living room playing live, that the studio is currently out of commission. But that was before I even knew Mike. I didn't even know Mike when that started. Put that in.
How'd you guys end up meeting each other originally?
Oh, it had to be Rock for Life. Yeah, it had to be Rock for Life. I've known, music scene wise, the person I've known the longest is Kate Faust.
Who is that?
That's Kate from Suffocate and Farewell Felicia. Her dad and her mom and dad and my mom and dad hung out in high school, and there are pictures of us, the famous picture that we talk about all the time. I used to have a Spider-Man sit and spin, if you know what that is.
Yeah, it sounds familiar. Yeah.
So like you sat on this thing and it had this like pedestal in the middle, and you hold it and you use your hands to make sure right.
Push people around. Yeah.
Well, there's a picture of Kate and I using it when we were little.
Oh, wow.
That's how long I've known Kate.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen the Spider-Man version or whatever, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, well, you're not going to get to see the picture of the Spider-Man one with Kate and I either.
So, did you start getting interested in the building the scene? Is it like Rock for Life is kind of what got you started in everything, or affiliated, or you were doing it before, or
right, so
Rock for Life guys?
So, in 1996, I was a freshman in college, and I was taking a class called Introduction to SRU's Computing System, and one of the assignments was we had to make a website, and it basically was a template, and it said like your name here, your major here, and I got done with it. I'm like, wow, this is ugly. So I started teaching myself how to make websites at that point. And while I was on the internet one night, I came across Hybrid's website. And Mike, I'm sure you remember that name.
Oh yeah.
Matt Franny, Steve Craven, John Coslin, and Tim Henry.
Okay.
Clearly, you know, Matt and Steve. Tim Henry is currently the lead singer and lead guitarist of the band Sour Mash. And then John Coslin, I don't think he's in a band right now, but I just saw him at Rock for Life. So you probably walked past him and didn't even know it. So I came across their website and it wasn't done. And I was at the time trying to teach myself how to make websites. So I did a mock-up of their site and I sent it to Steve I sent it to Tim. And the next thing I knew, I was designing Hybrid's website. And Steve's brother was in the band Sundog, Bruce Craven. And now I'm doing Sundog's website. And then the band Cage saw those two websites. Now I'm doing three websites. And now I'm up over 60 that are online right now. But that's where it started. I started designing websites because I was bored and didn't like my class template. And so I was doing that stuff. And then I opened a website in 2004 called AK Music Scene. Shortly after it opened, this woman in Texarkana, Texas, contacted me. She had a website called Bands Thriving on Fans. Her son was running a streaming unsigned radio station called Unsigned Online. He had a virus. He needed someone to take over his website. That was September 14, 2004, the first Pennsylvania Rock Show. So I walked into all of it backwards.
Yeah.
Which coincidentally is kind of a homage to a Creep song called Walking Backwards.
That's very cool.
And then it all morphed and it's constantly changing, and Build the Scene is relatively new. But you know, AK Music Scene, the Pennsylvania Rock Show, originated in 2004. So been around for a while.
Yeah, that's cool to know. I never knew that.
And the photography thing, which has come more into the light lately, I started doing at Rock for Life 3. So I've been doing that for a while, and I didn't get good at it. Well, not get good at it. I was okay at it, but now I have the right equipment, and Jonna and Raina have been teaching me, so I've gotten much better.
Yeah, I think me and Mikey and the band will just take about anything right about now, picture wise. God, we've been trying to get like a good picture for a long time now.
Well, yeah, I'm up for it. We just got to find a place and a time.
Yeah. You know, we get together, get together for rehearsals and stuff, and we focus on the rehearsing part, which is cool. It's which ultimately leads success for the band, you know, but yeah, we need to get some pictures for sure.
I had queued in the other software I was going to use. I had a picture of each of you that I was going to throw up in the background while we were talking. I can't do that in Zoom though.
Yeah. I seen a picture of me,
of you. Yeah.
The one you just took. Yeah. It's tough to get good pictures of me, man. I'm always like, I either look really bored in the picture, or you know, or I'm like looking off to the left or looking off to the right. Like, I don't know. I can never get some good. That's why I told you when we were on Messenger, I was like, man, did you get any more pictures? Like, I've been, urging for some good pictures, you know. But
what I'll have to do, I haven't been up on stage in Rock for Life in a while. I am allowed up there, but I don't tend to go up there anymore, but I will try and make sure if I don't have another one of you by that point, we'll get it next summer. I will come up and you can cheese it for me.
Yeah. Well, when Matt Ferrandi's like, you know, he always gets a picture, like a shot of like with the drummers and stuff like that. We'll do a selfie and stuff. He gets some good pictures and I get some good pictures with him when he's playing. But yeah, they added that, you know, the stage got that wall up and stuff, which is like, I think it's probably great for the actual performance, but there's not really so much going up on stage or like seeing from the side anymore. You know, you'd have to literally be on the actual, in the performance and take some pictures, you know?
Listen, I used to go up on stage with Skell back in the day and take pictures while Ekis had his eyes closed stomping around on stage. And I don't know how he never knocked me off, because I am not a little target and he's not paying attention.
Yeah, exactly. good times though, man. I really enjoyed doing the Rock for Life. I think this was my fourth one doing it. So very fun show. Nice stage to play and great crowd and great energy, and it's fun to play for sure.
Our first Rock for Life was Rock for Life 2.
So, you know, I'm looking at my, you know, you get a backstage pass for, you know, everyone you do, and I'm seeing 4, but there's a year that skips. So what, so how is it, go by year, or is it go by as many that was done already? So there's been 20, because I swear this one said 22 on it.
It's year 22.
Yep.
Okay. But 2020, that's why I'm confused, though.
No, so it's year 20. Year.
It's the 22nd Rock for Life that started in 99.
Correct.
Okay, I got you.
I was doing the hybrid website when the first one happened, and there was a little section on there for Rock for Life, except it wasn't called that for the first year. It was a benefit for firemen, if I remember correctly. And then they gave it a name in year 2, and it's gone on ever since.
Mm-hmm. And as Mikey said, when they first started, they just played on like a trailer, a back of a trailer or something like that.
Yeah, I have pictures on the Facebook page that I didn't take because I wasn't there, I think, from Rock for Life 2. And it's like a trailer that you would live in, and like the side is cut off of it.
Oh, wow. Hey, Mikey, did you ever miss any Rock for Life since the first one you did, or did you manage to play with at least a band every year?
I think we played everyone. We may have missed one somewhere along the line, but if we missed one, it would only be one. So probably everyone since Rock for Life 2.
And that's just Skell in general, or just you've been in a band that's played everyone?
Skell's played everyone, and our other band has played too, like Dimwit's played. And Lord Grunge and the Skells played one year.
Lord Grunge and the Skells.
One time performance. So that was fun.
So when did the stage actually get built? What year was that? Or which Rock for Life did they actually have the stage?
It kind of went up in stages, really. Like stages, no pun intended.
Right, yeah.
They like at one point they started out with the trailer, then they started bringing in tractor trailer flatbeds and parking two of them side by side, and then putting the canopy tents on top as roofs. Then there was another stage there at one time, if I remember, another wooden one, right, Mike?
I don't recall, but I clearly remember the tractor trailer trucks side by side with the canopy tents on top.
I want to say that Gigaroo was not originally a Rock for Life show. There was a different group that did it, different group of people. And I want to say that they built the original wooden stage, but it was not good.
Well, when you're on them flatbed trailers, you had to be really careful where you step, because if they were tight together, but not perfectly tight. So there was a gap. And if you step the wrong way and you got your foot caught in between, you'll break your ankle.
Oh, yeah. Especially with the way that you guys move around on stage, running around. E-Dog just stomps right through the cracks.
Good times. I'm trying to think. I definitely met Mike at a Rock for Life show. The first time I saw Scale, and I think I was telling you this this summer, Mike, was when Bones played the second half of the set when you guys were switching singers.
Boy, that's a long time ago.
Yeah.
Probably 2003, 2004.
And Wally, the first time I met Wally, I went to a show to talk to them about doing their website. So that was right around the beginning of things for me. And coincidentally, Kate was with me, who I was talking about earlier. And my vivid memory of that night was we walked up to Wally and had his gauged ears. And Kate looked at him and goes, "Those are scary."
before it started becoming a thing, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. But and E-Dog, I would have met the same time I met Mikey. But
yeah.
So I know, and I'm going to put you guys on the spot and you can yell at me later. How far long is the disc?
No comment.
I knew you were going to say no comment.
This is for Mikey P. Let him explain.
Okay, so we have a little time, right?
we definitely have some.
Okay, so here's the deal. We were all just at the studio the other night, and we were listening to a track and talking about it. And beforehand, we were sitting in the break room downstairs, and the owner of the studio was there, as well as some of the members from the Borstal Boys. And our producer, Rob Diener, was there. And I was talking to the owner of the studio, and he was mentioning that it took the Borstal Boys 2 years to do their CD. And he was real happy with how it turned out. And we started to make a couple laughing comments about the progress of ours taking so long. And we were teasing about it a little bit, but you know, COVID hit and this and that as well. But I said something to Bob, and I said, "Well, you know, the thing is, we're trying to make a CD that maybe we're trying to have a quality that may be further above than our actual abilities." And he looked at me, and I said, "And that's difficult." And he looked right back at me, and he goes, "I think all CDs should be made that way," meaning trying to stretch even further beyond where you think you are, going into the unknown, trying to make things like you may think you're here, but we're striving for there. So we're in a period of unknown territory. And this is part of what's adding to the time frame of the CD, okay? And that doesn't mean anyone's going to like it or it's going to be any good even. It just means that we're stretching as hard as we can to make it the best that we can make it with what we have to deal with at this point in time, bearing in mind COVID was there. And the reason it's taking so long also is because we don't get the opportunity to be in that studio very often because of other people's schedules and our producer, who's awesome, Rob Diener, but he's also very busy. So we're sort of in a perpetual holding pattern. And then when we get in there, we want everything to be extremely high quality because it's taken so long just to get to this point. So I don't have an end date, but I can tell you one song is done. Two more songs are extremely close to being done in terms of all the tracking is done. Basic tracking has been done on 10 songs, and the process now is going to, we're doing some overdubs at Wally Studio, overdubs done at the Vault in Rob's particular room of the studio, and we're being produced as we go through it, going through these unknown places. See, we have this weird luxury of making a record that a lot of people don't have, where we have time to cultivate ideas and see what's working, what isn't working. The problem is that adds time to, you know, the end date. But at least for whatever this CD turns out to be, it will have no stone unturned. And it's going to be a labor of love, and nothing happens fast in our band, but no wine before it's time. Let's say that.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, we're all looking forward to it being done just as much as anybody else. But like Mikey said, you're just adding to the mystery of it, you know, stretching the unknown and, you know, just not running through and just trying to get it done to get it done and get it out. Like, it's just, we've already spent so much time on it, and to push something out that's not ready or that hasn't reached its full potential wouldn't be what we strive to do at this point. So I agree with Mikey. It's moving. The moving parts are coming together a lot smoother now over the last couple months. But, you know, with the time to spend between studios, between Wally's, between, you know, going in there and having so much time to do this, obviously, if we really wanted to and had, you know, the time and the money to just throw down a week and just get everything done. But even then, I kind of like the process that we're taking now and just, you know, bringing out the best in everybody and thinking of new ideas and brainstorming and, you know, trying to put this new record on a national level and not just great amongst the locals, but on a national level, great. That's what we want to do, you know.
And bear this in mind, too. Our last record was Everything's Fine. When we were making that record, you know, we had Keithy on drums, and we know Keithy passed away. But when we were making that record, Keith kept saying, "Mikey, this is going to be the record. This is going to be the one." And we had released Shangri-La 27 before that. And I was pretty happy with Shangri-La 27. And I wasn't necessarily convinced that that Everything's Fine was going to be better than Shangri-La 27, because we were still in that process then, like we are now, because we were in that unknown period. And it turns out that, you know, Everything's Fine, I believe, was better than the last CD before it. And I have that feeling again now that we have to work extremely hard to make a CD that's better than Everything's Fine. You know, the bar continually gets raised, and we have to raise to the new level of, you know.
Speaking of the Steelers, Mike's starting to sound like Mike Tomlin here.
Oh, the standard is going on there.
But you get the idea.
I do. And for the record, I play songs off of all three albums on the radio station. So.
Wow, thank you. What do you play off the first one?
I'd have to go back and look. I think I have two tracks on there from that one. I don't remember off the top of my head right now, though. I'll have to get back to you.
What was the bigger one? Cellophane. What's the one that we do now live sometimes, Mikey?
Slunk.
Yeah, I always forget the name of that one. But yeah, we actually, hey, Mikey, we just gained a really good friend or good fan of just lately. One of my wife's friends, Talia's boyfriend, you know, came to one of the AC/DC shows, and I was telling him about Scale and stuff. And I was like, "You got Spotify?" He's like, "Yeah, we're on Spotify." And, you know, and he loves us. And he actually was like, "You guys got more music that's not on Spotify?" And I was like, "I do have self-titled album. And, you know, I have like two copies at the house, and I actually gave him, so he's listening to the very first one that's not even on Spotify and liking that too. So,
It looks like
way back.
It looks like I actually took down what I had on the first album. I sometimes rotate, but Scale on in rotation right now. We have Deaf Ears, Everything's Fine, Kill the Pain, Lose Myself, Mind Shite, Satisfy, and 2 Minute Atomic Clock.
Wow, that's a lot of tracks. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
I don't think I've ever played Kill the Pain with you guys live yet. That's one we never put in the repertoire. But I'm aware of the song, though.
Well, that song is a little more fitted to Bones' voice than Wally's, so that's sort of the reason. I don't know if that will ever happen, you know, at this point. I wouldn't say ever, but, you know, we shall see.
So I know Wally has the numbers tattooed on his fingers for the one track. Do you guys have any other hidden things like that to help you out, or unknown facts?
When you say hidden things, do you think he looks at his fingers to remember the numbers? Like,
oh, no, I know. He listen, I do not. But that brings me to a good, that brings me to a good point. When he has that mic in his hand, there's a spot, for those of you who can see, right here on the inside of his arm where there's not a tattoo. I don't know if you've noticed. It's supposed to have the Pennsylvania Rock Show logo. He promised that to me probably 15 years ago, and it's still blank.
It's funny that you notice the blank spot. It's like an eyesore because there's so much tattooing, and then you go right to the blank spot. You're like, look, there's nothing there.
Oh, it's supposed to be my logo. That's why.
Oh, he saved for that reason and never got it.
Yeah.
and he's a tattoo artist. So what kind of excuse is that? He's got his own gear. His own gun.
See, he claims that the reason is because he can't tattoo left-handed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I wouldn't want to tattoo left-handed either if I'm right-handed, you know? And you don't want the logo to come out less than, you know, what it earned. And
well, and the,
it's really, got to be nice. You don't want to do it with his left hand.
Really, the good thing is that he didn't do it because the logo has since changed. So,
oh, yeah. There you go.
But I'm not going to let him live down the fact that he said he was doing it and it's still blank. So we have been talking longer than I thought. We have like 9 minutes left in my 40-minute limit. So let's get a couple things out of the way before it cuts us off. What do you guys have coming up next? Like, do you have shows coming up that you want to mention?
October 9th at the Hideout. Mike, you can go ahead with the details on where that's located. I know it's far, but.
To the best of my knowledge, it's in between St. Mary's and Du Bois in a town called Weedville.
Weedville, yeah.
That's right. Oh, that's the name. One. That's the one with Endbringer and
Over My Dead Body.
Yeah.
I wonder what they do in Weedville. I wonder.
Be careful, Mike or John Lane might follow you.
But we're laying low on the gigs, Bill, because we're trying to be available for the studio. It's like, we know we have to play to keep tight and to keep the machine going. But at the same time, any time that's not put into the studio just delays the record that much more. So it'll just be wonderful to finish this record. Then for a while, we can focus our attention on lots of live shows for a period of time.
Knowing that I have all three albums, which song would you like me to play?
Men's Shite.
Okay.
That was one I was going to say. Everything's Fine.
Oh, yeah, we'll do both.
Moment for all.
Heard two tracks from Skell. We are on the second half of the interview / conversation / whatever you want to call my show. and Mike, you want to go ahead and give that shout out that you were attempting to give out?
I wanted to mention that today is Wally's birthday, the lead vocalist from Skell.
Happy birthday, Wally.
I wished him a happy birthday when I tried to drag him in here. And he's like, no, I can't do it tonight.
See, he's got priorities wrong. He's keeping their birthdays. Rock and roll is way more important.
He's probably eating cake and ice cream.
I bet you he's not doing much.
I know what he's not doing. He's not tattooing my logo on his arm.
Yeah. I actually wanted to get a tattoo for him. I had just talked to him. I was like, yeah, I mean, I'm so weird about tattoos. Like, I don't know. I mean, I know some friends and stuff that do it, but it's like, I want it to be good, but I don't ever want to pay the money to have something, like really good. Like when I have the money, I want to spend it on drums and other stuff, and which is where the priority should be. But I've tried to get Wally to chat to me recently. He's like, oh, I'm all booked up, man. I was like, really? Are you really all booked up? He was like, oh, man, I literally do like a tattoo a week. I can't do any more than that. So, you know, when I mean booked up, that's only a couple tattoos, but that's like all his mind mentally he wants to handle with the tattoos, I guess. So, Mikey P, do you got a scale tattoo, or is that just Wally?
No, I do. That on my arm.
I thought so.
Yeah, so it looks like a skull, but if you turn it sideways, part of the face is actually the letters that say Skell.
Okay, so that is the one tattoo you got then, right?
Well, I got another one.
Another?
It's like an American eagle that says freedom.
Oh, okay.
Where's that one? On my back.
Oh, well, you're always wearing a beater, so I probably never really noticed it. Is it still visible?
Yeah.
It's like shoulder? Yeah, I don't know. I don't pay attention that much, but Ashley had argued with me because she was like, Mikey P does have a scale tattoo. And I was like, I don't think he does. I think Wally does. She's like, I'm telling you, I've seen it. And I'm like, all right, I'll take your word for it. Which is like, how often does she see you compared to me? And, you know, that's how like non-observant I could be sometimes. And she's very observant, you know? So I got to ask, during the break, which song did you play or songs?
Well, we played Everything's Fine. And then we played, you're going to make me say it again. Yeah, I can't say it.
That's why I wanted to ask you, because I wanted Mikey to bring up what that word is and what it means. And
okay, Mikey, ahead. You're up.
You're up. He's sleeping.
Okay, so Menschite was a title Wally brought to the band. It's got a very odd spelling, and I misspell it on every single set list, and I spell it differently almost every single time. But basically, it means humanity in German. And if you listen to the chorus, it's all I want, it's all I need to find Menschheit and not fade away, so to find some humanity. So it's ironic that in such a brutal, screamy, heavy song, we're having a slightly poignant moment of we're still looking for the humanity, because well, I could go on a big diatribe of how I think heavy metal and all that's a very positive thing, and it's not negative. Like, I think it's very releasing a positive energy, and it can, it doesn't have to all be about the guy downstairs and stuff like that, because I never write songs like that personally. But so it's an uplifting, smashing little number.
So you just led me to a question I've been asking recently. So Robert Johnston, blues,
Crossroads.
Yeah. So, you know, he supposedly was a terrible guitar player. People chased him off stage and he disappeared for a year, came back and could play amazingly. And the rumor was that he met the devil at Crossroads and sold his soul to be able to play the blues. Mm-hmm. So don't read into this too much, but if you were at a crossroads and there was something that you wanted so bad that you'd be willing to sell your soul musically, what would you be looking to gain?
I wouldn't do it.
I knew you were going to say that. That's why I tried to steer you away from the fact that you're selling it to. Okay, so you don't have to sell your soul to the devil, but what's one thing that's a goal of yours?
A goal of mine? Okay, let's be honest and realistic. To finish the darn CD and make it be something really special. And even though it's been so long, if someone could say, darn, it took so long to make it, but it was worth the wait, that would be very gratifying.
Yes, it would.
How about you, Cam?
The goal ultimately to finish and it, you know, to get the notoriety deserved and what it's all cracking up to be, and just, you know, something that we can put out on a national stage with our contemporaries and be something special, like Mike said. Absolutely.
I think I'm going to give you guys one more question and I'll let you go, because much like you, I have other things I need to do tonight, which sounds terrible, but I have a podcast that was supposed to be released at 6 a.m. this morning and I didn't record it until 7 p.m. So, yes. All right. So let me give you an off the wall Pennsylvania rock show type question. Let's go with, you found a DeLorean and you can go back in time without Cameron's face. I didn't even get into the question yet. You found a DeLorean, you can go back in time without breaking the time space continuum because you don't want Doc Brown to yell at you, and you can go follow any band around for a year to hang out with them and learn from them. Which band would you follow around for a year?
Jimi Hendrix Experience.
That was quick. I think he's been paying attention to the show. He knew the question was coming.
No, it's just that he's my ultimate hero forever, and he died before I could ever see him, and that's the guy, you know. You probably don't hear a lot of Hendrixisms in my playing. Doesn't mean he's not my all-time guitar hero. So that would be it for me.
Yeah, but it's crazy because, you know, how long do you think Jimmy was actually out there doing it? It was only a couple of years. He just kind of hit it hard. And then, honestly, probably he's gained so much more notoriety after being dead than probably even – I mean, how, Mike, you remember, like, when he was just came out, was he huge then as he is now, or to kind of gain over time, did he become so significant? You know what I'm saying?
I'll give you the concise answer to that question. He paid his dues on what they called the Chitlin circuit. He was supporting acts like Little Richard and a lot of R&B artists. And he was discovered by Chaz Chandler, who was in a band called The Animals. He was the bass player. Their famous song was called House of the Rising Sun. Okay. In 1966, he was discovered. Chaz took Jimmy to England. They recorded Hey Joe very quickly with a band they put together. They released it. It became a hit. They needed an album. They had an album out in 6 months. And within that time frame, he became the most important musician in the world. And his arc from that point to when he died was 4 years. And he did all that music and all that recording in the time of 4 years.
It's amazing. It really is, though.
But he recorded every single night practically, to the point where, like, in 1970 and $69, he owed the studio $300,000 in recording fees. And back then, that was astronomical. So they built him his own studio called Electric Ladyland to try to curb the costs. And he was only in there a short time before he died. But that was the plan, to let Jimmy have his own place where he could record forever. He was the perfect artist. He did everything purely for the sake of art and the music. And it was just cool. Everything he did was the coolest. He was the coolest looking dude, the coolest singer, the best guitar player, revolutionary, trendsetter, played his guitar upside down. No one ever heard anyone play guitar like that. Just for me, he just had everything. I can't think of any rock star who has the package that he had way back when, 53 years ago.
Okay, Mikey, here's a story for you. Back when I first started the show and it was live in the living room, Tony Marinacci, who owned Total Music and Entertainment, who he was a signed songwriter for a couple major labels, and he was a publicist, and his company ran front of house at Star Lake, to give you just a quick synopsis of who he was. He was at He was at the studio with an artist, and they listened to the Pennsylvania Rock Show live at that studio.
Wow, that's an honor, my friend.
Isn't it?
See, that's magical stuff.
Yeah. And that almost goes back to, well, what we were talking about earlier when Mikey was saying about how much time Jimmy, you know, had and ate, recorded every night. And it's like talking about the, you know, the record being done and all that. It's just like the next CD. And it's, man, if we didn't have full-time jobs, it would be so much easier. If we could spend all day just doing this and rehearsing and practicing and getting better. And if it was really, you know, our full-time gig, which would be an ultimate goal for me as well, to just do it full-time and not have to worry about the job that I do now and can focus solely on that. And, you know, things would come together even quicker. So isn't that, I know, Mikey, you've been around for a long time, but even now I'm sure you still wish you could just do music full time.
Absolutely.
And be done putting in countertops and stuff, you know?
Right.
But, and that's what's going to happen, right?
No doubt. Next week.
No doubt. We're going to do it. We're going to do it full time eventually here.
I want to thank you two for hanging out with me tonight.
Thanks for having us. Thanks for having me.
And everybody, make sure you go to scalerocks.com and all of the pertinent links to find them all over the world wide web are on that site. And make sure you check out buildascene.com where you can find lots of Pennsylvania Rock Show episodes, about 65 episodes of Three Questions and a Song. And I think there are 5 episodes of Friendly Fire, which is a live show that we do now on XRP Radio. When I say we, it's Jonna from First Angel Media and I, and we team up with Tiz and Kat from XRP Radio. And we play music from our scene. They try and match it with their scene. And then the people in the chat room discuss both songs and they pick a winner. So far, we have lost every week because everybody in the chat room is from the United Kingdom. So if you're listening, you need to join us so you can vote.
Join in, vote.
That's right. All right. So my name is Bill. You're going to hear some more of the best unsigned rock and metal that Pennsylvania has to offer. When you hear John the American Hilljack Lane telling you how to subscribe and make comments, you will know that the episode has ended. Make sure you hang out on those stations, provide them with some support, just like they're supporting the musicians and me by playing the songs. We will catch you next week.
Thank you, guys. Rock See on.
This episode of the Pennsylvania Rock Show has ended, but be sure to subscribe to be introduced to more of the best on-sign rock and metal that Pennsylvania has to offer. Don't forget to rate and review the show, and we'll see you on the next episode.